This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. We've noticed that media narratives that bubble up on election night keep bubbling, even after the sun rises on a new day. Here's Democratic strategist James Carville on midterm election night 2018.
Tonight, there was some hope that the Democrats would have a wave election. It's not going to be a wave election.
Republican politicians and pundits ran with the no blue wave narrative, even though late counted ballots delivered big wins for Democrats in the following days and weeks. They turned out huge numbers, even though they didn't win the Senate. Now, 2 months ahead of Election Day, we see a fixation on one particularly vivid Democratic doomsday scenario, a kind of counterpoint to the blue wave that has been dubbed the Red Mirage. Here's Josh Mendelson, CEO of Hawkfish, a political data firm.
We see in the data that twice as many voters intend to cast a ballot by mail than have ever before. They are disproportionately Joe Biden's supporters.
Mendelson spoke with Axios on HBO last month.
It's going to take a while. It might be weeks. Because absentee ballots inevitably are harder and slower to count. When you have those prototypical cable news talking head moments of saying, well, you know, here's what we're seeing and this is what it looks like, it's gonna show Donald Trump in the lead in a lot of key places on election night.
The president could then prematurely declare he'd won the election if at that moment Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Florida appear red, and then claim fraud if and when he loses.
This assumes that the networks will award states based on day of the election voting. That would be grotesquely irresponsible.
Walter Shapiro is a fellow at the Brennan Center who's covering the 2020 campaign for the New Republic.
They will hesitate to call any state if there's a significant proportion of votes, particularly different kind of voters, out. Instead of having a red mirage, what one might have is a white whale of an election where half the states are in white because they haven't been called. Actually, some important states have procedures to start counting absentee ballots well before Election Day. Florida starts counting absentee ballots 21 days before the election. They have unbelievably close elections, but they're very good at counting the ballots. Another swing state that is used to mail ballots and will also start counting early is Arizona. If, for example, you find out at midnight that Joe Biden has won Florida and won Arizona, which is not an unlikely contingency, Donald Trump's path to 270 electoral votes will be very narrow.
So you don't buy the red mirage scenario?
If the networks choose to act irresponsibly and in opposition to all statistical good sense, it is possible. But I just don't think it's terribly likely.
Well, Ben Smith, media columnist for the New York Times, wrote that he was struck by the blithe confidence of some top TV managers and hosts who said they'd handled complex elections before and could do so again. They know what the public wants. Certainty. Even if it's not available, it can be manufactured.
Let us merely remember a very pivotal election in my life because I was working for Jimmy Carter. Watching the Carter versus Ford election, which was not called until 4 or 5 in the morning. So, I mean, it's not as if networks routinely say, okay, 10:30, ratings are beginning to slip, we have to call this election. Networks have been actually pretty responsible about calling states. There's also the principle that journalists should not hide things that they know. And what we're going to have all through the night are these very sophisticated data analysis sites like Nate Silver's 538, another very good site done by The Economist, and other election modelers who will be putting this information into their own models based on what returns we do have.
You're suggesting then that we may have results that will allow the analysts and commentators to jawbone for the evening. You do sound a little like the overconfident TV types that Ben Smith wrote about, though. I mean, he quotes Brandon Finnegan, the founder of Decision Desk HQ, which delivers election results to media outlets. And he said the confused responses from state election officials were causing, quote, the nerds to freak out.
Please, I'm not Pollyanna, but I do think the idea that we may not know the results of the election until December are a bit apocalyptic. I'm not saying in Donald Trump's America, any of this can't happen here. In 2004, 2008, 2012, there was endless speculation about what would happen to the presidential election with the October surprise, which would be a 9/11-like terrorist attack. Thank God it never happened. But I cite this only because we are not unused to popular apocalyptic scenarios in advance of a 21st century election. And again, I have been impressed by the conservatism of the actual people who make the calls for the TV networks. On Fox News, of all places, Megyn Kelly led a very skeptical Karl Rove down many corridors of the Fox News headquarters to their election calling room to convince him that Fox News was right in calling Ohio and the election for Obama, not Romney, in 2012.
They're way down the hall. So we'll do a little interrogation and see if they stand by their call, notwithstanding the doubts that Karl Rove has attempted to place.
The analysts working below were like moles peering into the sunlight when she invaded.
But it was also a wonderful vindication of the data analysts, many of whom are pollsters and other things in civilian life, coming in and priding themselves on doing the best job possible in calling states on election night. We don't know what election night is going to be, but we are going to know an awful lot more about who is likely to be the next president.
We don't know. That would be the bit of advice that you've offered TV coverage on election night. Embrace a phrase spoken so rarely on TV, I don't know.
Back in the days when George Carlin was a leading comic, he had the seven words you can't say on TV. We have now whittled it down to three words, I don't know. But election night should be a night for modesty about information. If I had a single wish, it is that the networks, in showing any state on the big map, not calling it, just showing the returns from, say, Wisconsin, do an estimate of what percentage of the vote we are seeing on the screen. One of the most misleading things that the networks and places like the New York Times have done traditionally is show what percentage of precincts are reporting. Those, of course, are only the people who voted in person. And if you have a dramatic change in the numbers after the network show 99% of the precincts reporting, yes, of course it feeds conspiracy theories. But the networks and the polling operations and states have a pretty good way of knowing by, say, 6 p.m. on election night, what turnout was in a key state. And if the turnout was 2.3 million and you only have 800,000 votes cast on the screen, you should have a big chyron that says only 34% of the estimated vote is being shown here.
Several outlets, Reuters, CBS, others, have already unofficially been using the term election week, or maybe they should go with election month. Margaret Sullivan of the Washington Post recently argued that the press needs to curb expectations for November 3rd starting now.
Okay. I have deepest respect for Margaret Sullivan. I hope I'm not violating this by saying that we will know things on election night in all likelihood. But yes, might be a rather dramatic patriotic pageant. Tune in on Thursday for the latest installment of Slow Count.
You have another bit of advice, which I'm guessing will be taken up by absolutely no one. You urge the networks not to report everything that the president says that night.
Oh, that seems even less likely than getting rid of panels on election night.
Okay, so why don't you seem as frightened about election night as so many of our colleagues in the media?
Brooke, I can give you four reasons. Number one, I may be the cockeyed optimist. Number two, thinking that things will go remotely normally does seem the interesting contrarian position right now. Number three, I do remember all the apocalyptic speculation around other topics that the press is used to deal with. And number four, I think talking about this now will change behavior, which will lessen the problems.
So how are you going to be watching election night?
I'm going to be sitting in front of a TV set while on my computer I have about 923 browser links open as I switch from Decision Desk HQ to the Washington Post to Nate Silver's 538 to the Economist model on Fraser Lake. It is not a pretty thing to watch.
And yet, I wish I could see it. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been fun.
Walter Shapiro is a fellow at the Brennan Center who is covering the 2020 campaign for the New Republic. This is the 11th presidential campaign he's covered.
Coming up, two examples of elections that went off the rails.
This is On the Media.